What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Managing Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we're also joined by Deputy Editor Nathan Ingram. Hey, Nate.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Full house this morning, so it's good to see everybody. We're going to be talking about the basically all the new Apple hardware that just dropped by press release this week, the M4 MacBook Air, the new iPad Air, and the base iPad, which is kind of interesting, too. There's a new Mac Studio out there with a really intriguing chip selection. And some stuff from Mobile World Congress, and I've been crazy reviewing the AMD and NVIDIA GPUs, so I've got thoughts on that. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Drop us an email at podcastinggadget.com, and join us Thursday mornings around 11 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel for our live stream. I think we're good. I think we're good to keep doing these as long as, like, I'm around and not sick or something. So join us then, folks, and hello. Hello, everybody. Sherlyn, how are you doing? With the news, with everything happening right now?
Surprisingly, I'm doing okay. Thanks, because I have, like, gotten most of the work out of the way. I'm having a chill Thursday, but definitely not an easy start to the week for us, right? I mean, I don't know if you know, Devendra, I mean, obviously you know, but you were working on a couple of super high priority reviews for us. And then we had Sam and, like, other people on the team filing a lot of embargo hands-on pieces over the weekend. And then to start the week, Tuesday and Wednesday, we had all kinds of Apple news that Nate, who's joining us today, is all on top of. Nate, how was this week for you?
It's been a little crazy, especially because I have to carve out a couple hours to talk to everyone today. But that's cool.
You know, no, it's useful, good. Useful time.
But yeah, Tuesday morning was, we had the stuff prepped, or at least we knew, like, it was going to come probably. So I had some posts ready to go and just throw those up and fill out the details. And it was about what we expected.
Let's go down the list. I think from priority, and the one everybody was excited about is the new MacBook Air. We've been waiting for them to throw an M4 chip in there. Apple reduced. In the fall, they made 16 gigabytes of RAM, the base level of RAM. I ended up buying my wife an M3 MacBook Air because of that. And it was totally worth it for that price. And we've been waiting for the new chip. It is here. No hardware changes beyond that, except they reduced price by $100. And now it starts at $999. This is such a no-brainer computer. Like, if you're familiar with Macs, right, this is just the one to recommend to most people, right?
Did it also not get the webcam upgrade, I think?
Oh, yeah. It got the 12, center stage webcam. Yeah.
So yeah, 12 megapixel. So that's something. That'll be nice, I think. But yeah, like, they, you know, previously $999 got you an M2. Mm-hmm. And now it gets you an M4. So, like, that's kind of a, yeah, no-brainer win. It is now easy to recommend the base model for most people, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could have seen Apple just keeping $1,100, right? And not giving us a discount or anything. Yeah.
Everyone in the chat's, like, excited, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, we have people going, this is the GOAT. And I'm like, okay. I don't know if I would call it the GOAT, but this, setting aside my personal struggles with
MacOS. It is the GOAT ultra portable. Yeah, so I don't know.
Sherlyn and I have been, like, going back and forth about Mac stuff lately because our corporate overlords are forcing us to use our work-issued Macs, so all of our Windows fans are struggling with the transition.
It's struggling. You know what? Nobody from corporate is listening to this, but I'm still okay on my Windows desktop.
Some people have been still okay on our team. I don't want to give all of it away because I don't want to affect all of you. But when it does happen, because it's a when, not an if, y'all are. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm a PC girl. Having to switch over has been infuriating.
I know this, but you know what, Sherlyn? Like, when you started doing more iPhone stuff, I remember you were an Android girl mainly too, and you're like, you slowly got it. You slowly, like, got the appeal.
I wouldn't say I got it because I still long for Android's cameras, mm-hmm. but that's a topic for another day, I'm sure. MacBook Air. Setting aside my issues with macOS, I can respect that it is a very good laptop. Frequently just has, like, longest lasting batteries in the industry, at least. Mm-hmm. Does all of the ARM emulation. Well, not emulation anymore. Just supports ARM natively now, if I'm not wrong. And just does it really well. Like, good job, Apple. Good for
good
you.
Job. But okay. It doesn't have a fan, which is both a blessing and a curse. It depends. Like, there's no fan noise, but also don't take that sucker outside in the sun because it will just sit there and roast and never eject any hot air, as I learned one time. But yeah, this is the good computer for everybody. I don't know what else to say beyond that. The Mac Studio also got an upgrade, and I know the more power-hungry folks were waiting for this. And this one's coming with the M4 Max, same price, starting at $1,999, but also the N3 Ultra, which is a chip people were waiting for a long time. Really weird to see a last generation like chip design being pushed in a new product. But I'm hearing from some people that apparently these Ultra chips just take forever to design and test and implement, because they're essentially two Max chips like squished together, connected by some sort of bridge. So it took a while to test. And from what I hear, the M3 Ultra is twice as fast as the M4 Max in really heavy duty data processing work. So
The number doesn't ultimately matter at the end of the day.
It is confusing though. Yeah,
it is. It's definitely weird. But I think for the people who are going to spend that much money and need that kind of power, they know right what they're getting into. They're not going to get confused by marketing semantics.
Is anybody excited about the iPad Air with an M3 chip?
So
it's an Air. It's good. It's fine.
Yeah. So it's very much like the MacBook update. Mm-hmm. But I think, after mulling this over a bit, I think what has happened, all these releases concurrently, is basically them getting off of, 5-nanometer processors.
Sure.
So they no longer have to support M2 on the Air or on the iPad. So I think that's essentially what they were doing, is the M3 is way into production. They probably, we have so many of these, there's no reason not to put them into the new.
They're swimming in M3 chips at this point.
Right. Yeah. So let's just do it. Right. And that's fine. I think for both the Air, the MacBook Air and the iPad, they're both such mature products at this point that you're going to get just spec bumps. And I'm working on or thinking about how I'm going to review the iPad. And it's basically everything I said a year ago.
It's good.
Still applies.
Plus one. Yeah.
Plus one. Right. If you were going to buy one, you should still buy one. And the same token goes for the Air. Like we said, for the same price, you're now getting an M4 instead of an M2. That's a big win.
I think when, especially these products that are so mature, it's sort of is the decision, should you buy the new one or should you if the old one was so good, it's probably a couple $100 less now. Maybe you should just look for that. And that is something I always kind of think about in my reviews. But then they drop the price. So it's I don't think you're going to find an M3 MacBook Air for a lot less. Maybe $800 again as they clear out some stuff. Maybe you'll find some M2s below $800. And that'll be an insanely good deal because that's still a very good computer, right?
I would agree. Yeah, that's if you need a budget Mac, there you go. You just got to keep an eye on Amazon and whatnot and see what they've got. The other thing that's kind of funny about the Air is that I was thinking about right now, the way I'm thinking about it is, what's the differences between the Pro and the Air? And they always have to have things to differentiate. And, every so often you kind of say what does make sense? What are you giving up for this money? And the Pro still is crazy expensive. But with the Air, this is the generation where I'm starting to feel it's had the same screen for 5 years. It's had, that's the big one for me, is the same screen and no Face ID. And I understand that 5 years ago, those were smart ways to differentiate the product lineups. But now it's starting to feel a little, miserly.
And you really want Face ID is the thing you're waiting for?
I'm not waiting for it, but having used an iPad Pro, I way prefer it than having to keep on reaching up to authenticate, sign in to things, etc.
I feel that. For me, it's
but that's I think again it depends on how you use it.
Yeah.
If I'm using it literally to do my whole job today, except for this podcast.
You could have done the podcast on it. I think
I could have tried, but I didn't want to cause problems. But I think that if you're a more slightly more casual using it, it's not going to bother you as much. But I was thinking about the fact that you could go out there and probably find a refurbished M2 iPad Pro from a couple of years ago and get a better screen and get, essentially the same performance, that sort of thing.
It's mainly the screen. I don't know if they'll ever bring a fast refresh rate screen down to the iPad Air. We're also still waiting for that on the base level iPhone. And to me, that is such a qualitative leap in quality, because all we do all day is scroll. Folks, if you just make the scrolling better, that's all I need. And cheap Android phones and tablets are doing that, so why can't Apple? To me, that seems the big annoyance. Even 90 hertz. Give me 90 hertz, and even that will reduce eye strain a little bit. That's just a shame. But hey, iPad Air.
Yeah, as I'm looking at the screen, or when I'm thinking about the M2 model, which I reviewed less than a year ago, the screen itself looks very lovely. It's just a basic LED or LCD, but it still looks very nice. But yeah, you definitely notice the stuttering compared to the higher refresh rate. And then the other thing that I think about a lot is, like, at one point Apple had the mini LED screens in the iPad Pro. So they've got the tech, you know, they could have this middle ground where, like, the basic iPad is just like an LCD. This one's got the mini LED, and then they've got the OLED for the Pro. So I'm like, that feels like it'll be a good update.
It's I guess they know who will buy their products, right? The techies who really want this stuff will just bump up to the Pro, and then the people who want not just the base iPad will go for the Air. I feel like the Air is just, like, in a weird space because it doesn't look that much different, doesn't feel that much different. And I have always been a fan of the base model iPad because you get so much bang for your buck. And this year you're getting still, once again, a pretty decent amount of bang for your buck, right? Like, this is coming in at the reduced price that the last base iPad was brought down to last year, $349. That thing launched originally over $400, and we were really annoyed about that. So
yeah, I think it was $430 or $450 even, possibly.
So I love this, like, price range, because it's just such a throwaway thing, right? Like, why not just get another base iPad? Your kid needs, like, a thing to do stuff on. Like, that is such a decent price, and if they destroy it, you know, it'll run for a couple of years, they'll crack the screen, but in a couple of years you may replace it or something. Like, to me, that's just, like, a really good, useful thing. My daughter started messing around with, like, art stuff on the 10th gen iPad Air or iPad base iPad, and now she's playing Minecraft on it, and she's playing in big worlds with lots of textures and stuff. Like, it's running really well. So that is such a good computer, basically, to scale with people. So shout out to the base iPad, which is better now too.
They added the A16, which is smart. Interesting that it doesn't run Apple Intelligence, because my assumption was it was going to, because, you know, they've tried to get that on almost every product they sell, but not this one.
I mean, that to me was the most interesting thing out of all the news we've been talking so far.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
the iPad Air, cool. MacBook Air, great value, cool also, but incremental, no huge change to chassis design. I do want to point out, Wes Jackson in the chat has been talking about, like, the colors should be nicer on the MacBook Air. Agreed. I don't know about the iPads. I mean, that led me to think I haven't really seen a very colorful laptop in a while.
There is a blue MacBook Air now, which is
right, pretty. But what Wes Jackson was saying is he wants it to be very saturated.
If it's anything like the iPads, it's like the suggestion of blue.
It's going to look like silver. Sky blue. I remember, when the Surfaces had, like, blue? You want blue? This is the bluest blue your eyes have ever seen. You know, you look at it too hard and, like, all you see is blue for a second. That's how
the basic iPads also have great colors. Bright yellow, bright pink.
Yeah.
They do. So I kind of, go ahead.
I mean, Wes Jackson also pointed out, and I wanted to ask the two of you what you thought on this, really, is that, like, why is Apple so behind with screen refresh rates, right? We understand they are behind. We've known this for a while. Well, why? Like, what is holding them up?
I think, well, they tend to value other things, right? They do put good screens in their devices, like the base iPad.
The quality is excellent.
Yeah, the quality is excellent. Like, this is the problem I have with the Apple. What's the display, the monitor that's like $1,500? Is that the studio display now?
Studio display.
I can't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
It doesn't have high refresh rates either, right? That is, you have to go up to the Pro monitor for that.
Right.
But it looks good, and people keep those things for years and years. So it's like they value other things in addition to refresh rate. But I'm just saying, like, where the market is now, like, refresh rate, like, it makes such a huge difference. I was thinking the base iPad is this thing where they're like, we can't make this too good. We're Apple, actually. And if we allow ourselves, this will be too good. So the last time they're like, it has to be more expensive because we put a better chip in there. So that's kind of how you're doing it. And now it's like, well, it doesn't have Apple Intelligence. So if you really want that, you need an iPad Air.
It just seems so ridiculous to me. I'm like, you just went all in. You made everything.
It's ridiculous because you get the sense that, like, they want to be able to tout adoption numbers. Like, this many people are using Apple Intelligence. It's a win for us.
Mm.
And they've also said in the past that the best selling iPad is, no surprise, the cheap one. So you'd think that'd be a natural way to be like, okay, like, we can, you know, again, like, juice our Apple Intelligence adoption here.
It's really telling, right?
It's very surprising.
The cheapest chip that can run Apple Intelligence is the A17 Pro, which was in the iPhone 15 Pro series. So that would have cost more money to jump back up to that chip. The A16 is probably something they can put out cheaply. But I do think it ultimately comes down to, like, sort of like the iPhone SE. Does Apple want more people to buy the base iPad? I kind of don't think so. Actually, I think they want people to buy the thing with a higher per average, you know, price. So they'll get a higher return from it. Well, it is this weird balance. Like, Apple never wants people to just go straight to the cheap device, even though that is the one I think most consumers will consider first, you know?
Well, and to your point about how much you like the base iPad, like, everything you said is absolutely true. But then I think about somebody like myself, where I, so last year when I reviewed the Air, I was like, this is the one to get, because
sure,
it has enough improvements, better screen, better multitasking, you know, Apple Intelligence now is a thing if you care about it, better processor, obviously. I believe it's the only one, or I don't think the base iPad supports the Apple Pencil Pro. So if you're really into visual arts, that's a win for you also. So they do all that without making it too expensive.
Yeah.
Like, it's too not good. Cheap. It's not cheap, but the price is, I think, reasonably fair for what you get, as is the price for the basic iPad. But, you know, like, when I reviewed the basic one, I was like, it would feel like too constraining for me compared to like what I want to do with it. So like, I'm an Air guy, but like other publications, I remember, said the same thing about the Air being in kind of a weird place. Like, you could either just have this like cheap basic iPad, or you could go the other way. But they bumped up the price on the Pro last year when they redesigned it. So now the cheapest one is $1,000, which is bonkers.
The only smart decision for an expensive iPad is a used iPad Pro. I think that's kind of the only way to go. Like, yes, you could buy the Air and then you have this year's chip, but last year's M2 chip or whatever would still be pretty freaking powerful.
Yeah, and they've got good, Apple is really good about having like quality refurbished stuff on their store pretty often.
Yeah.
You can save some cash, get the one from a couple of years ago. That's a good call. I'll have to consider that.
Buy smart, folks. Yeah.
If you think about it, we've just been talking about how incremental everything has been like over the last few years. So definitely let the last 2 year models, the hardware wise, they basically feel the same, I think. And the processors, even if there have been like leaps in performance, it also wouldn't translate to much real world difference. I don't think you can tell me that the A17 is so much different than the A18, other than supporting Apple Intelligence a bit more natively slash better.
I could see why they updated the base one. Like, A14 is probably starting to get old. And again, I think it's also a matter of them moving away from like producing things at like the certain, like, you know, I'm not a huge chip guy, but I was talking to Aaron about this yesterday, and it's like, okay, they've removed all the products using, I think, 5-nanometer chips from their lineup at this point. And that was probably like a weird strategic part of the decision that consumers aren't really privy to, right?
I see a comment here. Mo Esquire says from the chat, Apple stays asking for 2025 money for 2011 screen technology. It's wild. I wouldn't say that. Like, the numbers are the same, but the actual technology behind the screens they do get better. It's a better LCD. It's brighter than before, you know, in many respects. Like, it is getting incrementally better. Nate, like, how do you feel about the iPad Air screen at this point? Is it a decent value?
Yeah. So again, I haven't reviewed the new one, but it's the same as last year's. And, you know, like, if I sit there, like I said, if I look at the screen, I'm like, it's reasonably bright. The colors are nice. It's great to like watch movies on, play games. Like, it's a very quality display. But the thing where you start to feel it not being as good is when you compare it to the iPad Pro, and specifically, again, as we were saying, the refresh rate, right? Like, it feels, you know, I can feel the stuttering of the screen more, and that makes it feel like it's not as fast, even if that's not the case, right?
It's how our eyes perceive speed, basically, yeah.
I will say that at $350, the base iPad is a really decent purchase. Like, people in the chat, Declan, Deepro, are saying that it's used in schools and hospitals, for example. Battery strength appears to be something you will notice in an older model, you know, falter faster, I guess. And then I want to point out, we had this chat in our team Slack yesterday, but Paradise and Wes Jackson are both like, we love the iPad mini. And I'm like, me too. I would adore the iPad mini 7 myself. But we seem to notice a bit of like loss of love for mini things from Apple's end, right, Nate? We were like...
Yep.
I mean, I was like, should we write about the iPad mini graveyard? Like, what happened to all the minis?
The phones are getting too big. I think that's ultimate. Like, when I get a Pro Max phone, I'm like, it's just a couple more inches to the mini. At that point, I should probably, I got to differentiate more. I got to get like a full iPad, basically, you know?
Yeah, I guess the pricing would also be confusing. I mean, if you're going to stuff like proper power into a mini device, then like, would you charge more or charge less? I hard to say.
Yeah, no. So like, yeah, the mini is definitely a step up over the basic one in almost every regard. It's smaller, but that, again, that's not like a a downside to the people buying it. I don't think you buy it because you want it to be small. And like, I reviewed the latest Mini last fall, I guess it was, and I hadn't used one for an extended amount of time in a long time. And I was like, this thing is so much fun. It's just like a cute little iPad you can like almost put in your pocket, and you can use the stylus to take notes. And again, I wish I had some visual art skill. I don't, but it would be a great little drawing canvas. It's a perfect size to read things on. Like,
it is. You know, it is.
It was my Bellatro machine. Perfect size for just playing that game relentlessly.
What if you could have something that size and then you unfold it?
Make it fold, Apple.
Make it fold. But fold it to be bigger, not to be smaller, is what I'm saying.
Like, no, I want
it to
be smaller.
Give me an iPad mini that, then you just get a phone. I don't know. Just get, like, to me, like, the big thing, giving you something that you could slip into your pocket, like the iPad mini, but also bang that out to the full 10-inch iPad or something, that would be really cool.
So are you saying, Devendra, are you saying you're for foldables?
I'm for that idea of a foldable. To me, that is more interesting than the smaller phone things. But hey, we'll see. I do want to buy a foldable at some point to just like get that you know, experience.
Live the life, yeah.
Live the life just a bit. Okay, anything else we want to say about these Apple devices? Because we got a lot to go through here.
I feel like that kind of covers it. I mean, we made the joke yesterday, like, this could have been an email. And, like, I guess it was an email, right?
It was an email.
The iPad stuff was, didn't that just drop? I don't know.
Yeah, they just dropped it.
There was a video for iPhone 16e last couple weeks ago, but yeah.
I can reveal that, you know, Apple talked to me and a few journalists about the Air and stuff. Like, so that was more important to them than I think the iPad. So, whatever.
Well, no, Nate did chat with people too, I think. So
they
didn't do the little briefing thing. They just didn't make a big deal of it.
It's primarily focused on the Air. Like, the base iPad is really just like we put a new chip in it. Oh, I will say one other thing about the Air before we move on is that they improved the keyboard accessory, which I like. It is both. It's a little thinner and lighter. It has the function row, which is great. And it's shockingly cheaper. It's still super expensive. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, they cut $30. It starts at $270.
That's almost a full base iPad.
It's bonkers, I know, but it's cheaper because it used to be $299 and $349.
Okay. I have a question. Yeah. Can I use the Magic? This is a dumb question coming from someone who's never tried this before. Okay, can I use Magic Keyboard with an iPhone?
Nope.
Dang it!
Logitechs. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna get one of those, but I've been
a little mini Bluetooth. Yeah.
There's this Threads account that's been posting these renders of a keyboard case for iPhones that they're making, iPhones and other phones, and it just looks super good. So this is my workaround for my IT problems, I think.
I don't know. I think it's actually all around. I'm looking at TikTok. I keep getting ads for this like tri-fold pocket phone, like pocketable keyboard that actually looks pretty good.
I've seen that one.
They exist.
Yeah.
They exist.
No, I'm talking about another one. I'll send you the link. I'm talking about this thing called Amber from a company that is they make AI writing tools. Anyway.
Okay, let's move on to Mobile World Congress 2025. And I remember when people used to be really excited about this thing. And now it's like, I don't know. Chat, do you guys care when we see Mobile World Congress?
Yeah, chat, do y'all care about MWC?
As much as you care maybe about CES or something? I don't know. I feel like that era has passed.
I think COVID really kind of killed it. Like, that was the final blow.
Although it seems like it's hopping this year. There's a lot of news and a lot of people went.
I don't know if it's necessarily hopping or popping this year. I mean, look, I'm friends with a lot of people in the industry, not to flex or anything.
Wow.
But
jeez. Truly has friends.
All right.
I don't know about y'all, but I got friends in the real world.
What is
CFI 42 and Wes Jackson in our chat, by the way, echo this sort of sentiment. CFI 42 is like MWC. Wes Jackson's like, I used to care, but then everyone has their own conferences now. And that is the thing, right? That is the thing we've seen, the trend we've seen in the last few years of like these sort of grouped events don't happen as much anymore because companies do their own things more frequently. I think that was a result of COVID, like Nate said. And it both like made MWC less important, but still somewhat important, as well as it made our lives harder in this space because we now have to cover everything every week instead of like once a month, we cover one conference or something. So the cadence has changed. And I mentioned my friends as a mostly because, you know, there's a few of them that went to Barcelona.
And
I've been like, what is the point?
What did they think about it?
I think I hate to throw shade on people, But I'm like, I think people enjoy traveling to Europe.
Sure. That's not, that's no revelation. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
When they don't have to pay for
it. I would
have
loved to have gone to MWC.
I think the shade to go to Barcelona. That y'all are not picking up that I might be throwing is that I don't want to suggest that they didn't have professional reasons to be there. But when I say that they want to travel to Europe, it is a side benefit, a pretty major one, that makes it more alluring to go to a show that maybe you didn't need to go to. I think that for us at Engadget, at least, we definitely didn't send a team, not because none of us wanted to go to Europe. All of us wanted to go to Europe. But
we even have people closer to there. Yeah.
A, have people closer. We have people based in the UK and Europe. But B, like, we would need to justify the expenses. And, like, it's super expensive to go. Like, our team covers our own travel and accommodation. So, like, we would have to pay the flight. We would have to pay for the hotels to go. It's not, like... And also, we tend to get briefed ahead of time and see all the interesting things, even in America. Mm-hmm. So, we're pretty fortunate to be able to do that and didn't go. And I don't think that the amount of news that came out of it this time, from what I'm seeing, really would have justified traveling there from America as well. So
it's more of like a nice to have thing. And also, like, folks, if you're seeing influencers and other folks out there, a lot of folks get sent out there by companies who want them.
Yeah, there's a lot of sponsored.
Consider that
travel.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, as a rule, Engadget doesn't do. Like, yes. We just don't accept sponsored travel. In case it was never clear before, now it is clear. We just don't.
So is there actually news from this thing?
I know, right? After all that crapping on, shitting on it.
Lenovo did a bunch.
Yeah.
But I think it's Lenovo, mostly weird concept stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, I really got a hats off to Lenovo, always coming with this sort of like weird experimental energy, and I love it. They were the ones that we were able to see ahead of time in New York. So Sam went, and Sam saw a few things. There was a codename Flip foldable laptop that like is another take on its like rollable laptop that we saw at CES. This thing, like, it flips out. The screen, like, kind of like trifolds, flips vertically. It's very weird. I don't even know how to describe it. So I'll use Sam's words.
Lanky lad.
It is. Sorry, those were your words, right?
No, that was him.
Oh, it was him. Lanky lad. This thing, hysterical. Basically, imagine your laptop and you open it up and then you open it up twice more on top of its screen. That's kind of what we're talking about. It's a normally a 13-inch panel and then it can unfold vertically to 18.1 inches. And I guess the benefit of this is... I mean, I know. The quote benefit of this is that like you can get that extra space and you don't have to wait around as long as you'd have to wait for Lenovo's like rollable. You know, that one we saw at CES, if y'all haven't seen
it. For everybody who really wanted the rollable 18-inch.
Yeah, like, the rollable.
This will get
first
you there
of all,
faster.
That screen's definitely not going to be as good because it's rolling into the hinge, but like it's going to come up super slow. I got to tell you, I was shooting the video for this at CES and I was like, God damn, how long do I have to hold this?
This feels like a typical thing. Like, actually, I remember going back to some MWC like quote unquote innovations. No, nobody needs this. It's cool you can do it, bro, but nobody needs this. Like, you look at this and be like, are you overcompensating much? And also,
it looks ridiculous.
It looks ridiculous.
Y'all are so mean.
Yeah, it's just really, really awkward.
It'll never, like, you can't use this anywhere, really. Like, you can use this in a cafe, in an airplane. Something I've noticed and people don't think about a lot is that if you're working outside and it's windy, your laptop is in danger. And this has happened to me several times. Like, I was once at a bar in, like, I don't know, San Francisco doing some work. And group of people needed a picture. I was like, okay, I'll help you take a picture. My MacBook Air was just sitting there doing nothing. A gust of wind came and flew it off the table.
Oh, yo, your MacBook Air goes with the air.
It goes with the air. Because it was also so light. But, like, having a laptop open is an air, like, pocket. So air hits that, it can go flying. And I never
don't
forgot
know if
that.
Y'all look, I don't know if, I want to show for the live stream what we're talking about. And I know it's tricky for us to do a screen share right now, but basically to Sam's point in his hands-on, he also says that, its hinge wasn't fully up to the task of keeping everything stable, as even a light tap would cause the whole panel to sway back and forth in a disconcerting way.
Let's be clear. This is a concept, right?
It is a concept.
A production. Okay.
I was going to get thank you. But Lenovo was not going to sell this thing because it clearly isn't ready for prime time. I do want to add to, if we scroll slightly down that article, you'll see a picture of the touchpad. Lenovo also included in this thing what it's calling a smart force pad. There's a 3-layer illuminated dashboard, because those are great words. someone in our chat dropped a not safe for work comment, so I'm not going to say a thing. But
listen, no, it's your screen does not need to extend so much. At some point, you're overcompensating for something.
I wonder. Per our conversation about Apple, we're like, this is the most incremental of incremental. And then we go to the other side of the equation here, right, which is these like ridiculous concepts. Like, we can't be like, oh, this is too boring and incremental. I'm like, oh, this is too weird. Like,
I'm not that way.
I know, but yeah, it's just fun to be like, I like seeing companies.
I like
take
seeing
weird
the ideas.
Yeah.
I like seeing the experimental. And again, like you said, Nate, like Lenovo's not doing anything with this yet, right? The rollable is going to be available for sale at some point, but not this one. I don't want to spend too long on this because Lenovo had like a few other things that we should talk about. Another one being a external display concept, which I'm actually very intrigued by. And then I'll get to the last one, which is
this actually
at least
seems useful. Yeah.
Yeah. So this, I don't know if there's a name, but basically it's a set of accessories or like a family or ecosystem of accessories that can attach to a 16-inch ThinkBook, the ThinkBook 16P. The base like machine itself is pretty standard. It's a 16-inch machine with like Intel Core PC, CPU, NVIDIA GPU, the 5070, in fact, good displays and whatever. But then when you get to the attachment or the attachable accessories, you start with like Lenovo's so-called Magic Bay docking system. That allows you to add either the second display concept, which is a small like 8-inch screen that you can like snap on magnetically, as an external monitor or whatever. Or you can use the second display, like basically a dual screen. So you can snap it onto the back of your lid and then you get wings, right? Like two screens that seem like wings. So you have a triple display setup. Lenovo gives you, oh boy. This is the Tico Pro, I believe. No, the Tico Pro. I'm so confused with all these names, by the way, because there's, this name is Tico, out of nowhere, from Lenovo. Basically, this is a much slimmer, thin display that you snap on top of the lid of the laptop. And it adds like an 8-inch tall sort of extra row to the top of your laptop to function as like a spare screen where you can see all your, like, it's like a running ticker, I guess, of like notifications.
Sounds like a touch bar.
Yeah, like a touch bar, but on top of your laptop screen. Yeah. And then finally, I think there was just the Tico, which I told like Sam when I saw it, I was like, I want this. It's a circular screen that can, again, snap on top of the laptop lid. And it's like an AI companion and can react with emoji to like throughout the day. So it's kind of like a Tamagotchi just sitting on top of your screen. I think that's cute as heck. So if you scroll all the way to the bottom of this article, by the way, Davinder, you can see this Tico Tamagotchi staring at you. It's kind of
I don't see it in the dock here. So it's at the, drop me the link.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's at the bottom of this thing that you're sharing your screen on right now.
Let me find that.
Do you see it?
That
all the way to
thing.
The bottom. Yeah. Look at that thing.
Ben, please, you can share the entire, all the things, because I'm sharing.
We'll share the links to the show notes in the episode, wherever it goes up on the audio podcast. But please go to Engadget.com and look at our MWC coverage. A lot of really wild ideas from Lenovo, and not all of them dumb.
Here's the thing. Like, they're kind of cool. You'd be like, huh, kind of interesting concept. So many things here, like the external display wings looks really annoying to put together, to be honest. Like, it looks super annoying. You know what's great? Just like have another little external display, have a tablet. This is unfortunately like
have an iPad.
If you have a Mac, your iPad is an external display. Sorry, Sherlyn. It's like you're walking with a screen and a laptop anyway, you know. That's how that makes sense.
Also, I must say, in this economy.
Bulky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In this economy.
No, soon it's becoming the running joke, but like, yeah.
It is. This economy is wild. But some of these screen attachment type things, I believe I read that Sam wrote, some of them have kickstands built in to improve the stability, which we said was a problem with the previous one. Look, we can talk ad nauseum about these accessories, but I believe not all of them are actually coming to market. In fact,
they're concepts.
A start. The Magic Bay. Yeah. They're probably all concepts at this point, and I think Lenovo needs to spend more time testing it out. But they're also doing this as a way to gauge our reactions, right? They're like, oh, do people like this? So if you like I guess tell us.
You know what's useful, though? They did have a solar PC concept with just like solar panels on the back. That's cool.
This is my favorite one, as much as I like that silly little AI companion. This is the Lenovo, solar PC concept. Basically, it's a laptop with a built-in solar panel into the lid, and you can use it to charge the laptop, basically. I mean, it's going to take a while to do, but the technology has improved so much lately that like it doesn't take as long as you would think. So
20 minutes in the sun gets you an hour worth of video watching. That's pretty good, actually.
That's not bad at all. It's using a back contact cell technology on the back of the laptop lid, so you can get that amount of power conversion that you just said out of interest. So I think this is the neatest idea I've seen. I'm here for anything that improves sustainability. But of course, I am no expert on solar technology or solar power. So anyone out there listening or watching, tell me if this sounds like a good or a bad idea.
We kind of need solar stuff everywhere is the thing. Like, not everyone's going to get solar panels on their roofs to like make their entire house solary. But you could get like little external solar batteries. I have like one of my house cameras that's up front, like has like a separate solar thing. And I just never have to touch that camera. I never have to change the batteries. I never have to do anything. So these little
it's like when Samsung did it for the remote controls.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, we've had solar remote controls or like solar calculators. Right. Like we've had that stuff forever. But that was cool. But this is like a whole laptop. And you work outside, like keep your laptop charged. Like this is a cool concept. Or maybe give me like a little solar tent that I plug into USB-C. And that is just trickling energy into whatever device I have plugged in. I think I just made a new startup, folks. So nobody steal that idea.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's your backup career plan. Wes, people in the chat are like, Wes Jackson's like, would that be in danger of overheating? CF540 is like, too bad you can't charge it well with the lid open. So those are good questions. I will ask Lenovo. I know Lenovo listens.
It's sort of like the angle. If you have a laptop open, it's still getting sun on the back. And trust me, what I learned from that MacBook Air, your laptop will still get cooked even if you have it open. Like this is actually a good use for that heat, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
And Sam saw this, right? We can ask him, like, what the...
Yeah, Sam did see it. I mean, I would have loved for Sam to be able to join us today, but our team is so... It's just, we can't have so many people on the podcast at once.
Do we care about the Xiaomi 15 Ultra?
So, I will point out that Xiaomi 15 Ultra, I mean, it's not probably coming to the US, but it is one of those, like, phones that we see elsewhere that, like, people lust cool. after.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 6.7-inch phone with a really bright screen. Gets up to 120 hertz, but
it's
the
got this little
refreshing
attachment.
It has that like Leica camera built in, but there is this little attachment that grip. Adds a grip and some, I believe, lens cappy things or lens.
Yeah, I see a lens cap. I see so you can add like maybe filters and stuff, like UV filters. Mm, maybe,
exactly. And Xiaomi collaborated with Leica to make this. So, I mean, check out Sam's hands-on, one of his 17 hands-ons that he filed like late Friday, basically.
Poor Sam. Pour one out for Sam. I saw something. Wasn't there one with like a big lens or something that was like attachable to a phone?
Yeah, that's the Xiaomi. I believe that's the Xiaomi 15 Ultra. Or are you talking about something else?
It looked like the Xiaomi, but this one is not quite it. I don't know. Maybe it was that I was thinking of. Yeah.
If you're remembering it from this week, it was probably the Xiaomi, unless you might be thinking the HMD had some other attachment that was on a camera.
Maybe that one. But anyway, anything else? Let's look at the rest of the news from.
There's some other stuff. I mean, the Nothing Phone 3A and 3A Pro were released or unveiled as well, and they look really cool. I mean, I was just talking to someone who doesn't know tech at all, so you know, real life friends. And you remember like 10 or 6 years ago, there was this obsession with like the transparent iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are obsessed with devices that are transparent, and nothing continues to feed on that obsession.
They look cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It, so the Nothing Phone 3A.
Brings us back to 1999.
It looks so good. These are a pair of, like, I think mid-range phones. They're going to cost around $379 and $459 for the 3A and 3M Pro, respectively. Matt Smith on our team wrote a pretty in-depth hands-on with these devices. He's come away pretty impressed. We're going to have a review up shortly. They're going to be available in the U.S. through the Nothing Beta program. So I think it's worth checking out. It's not like you can't get this phone at all in America,
right? This might
be
the first thing we've talked about that anybody can buy, like, right? Or like all the Lenovo stuff with Concept, right?
Yeah, the Lenovo stuff, other than the ThinkBook 16P, which attaches to those accessories, which we are able to buy. But yes, exactly. To your point, this is something you can actually buy. Hey, speaking of something you can actually buy, Samsung.
Yes. Yes,
Samsung launched this week a trio of Galaxy A series devices, which, by the way, I'm so glad they don't do that Awesome Squad event anymore for the A series.
Awesome Squad, oh dear.
Nate, this is back when Chris Velasco was with us. Mm-hmm. And we used to, like, I think right during the pandemic or right after, we used to live stream alongside these live events that companies would have. Samsung had an event for a Galaxy A70 something or something like that, 80, 90, I don't know. And it would not stop with the cringe millennial / Gen Z speak. It was very much a take your squad and like vibe up.
Yeah, it's coming back to me a little bit.
I will force you to rewatch it later today.
Please do.
Anyway, so this is the main news. The Galaxy A series, basically the A56, 36, and 26 were released this week or announced this week. And if you're in the UK, you'll be able to buy, or in Europe, you'll be able to buy any of them. The A56 in particular is a very interesting one. However, the A56 doesn't seem to be coming to the US just yet. Samsung says later this year.
Mm-hmm.
No actual other date. And they also don't want to give us a pre-order like link, yeah, or whatever. Like, where can we find more info?
There is some sort of A50 already available in the US, right? Like,
yes.
Is it the 55?
A55.
Yeah.
But I believe it was also kind of touch and go in terms of the availability there. I believe when it comes to the US and A series, Samsung's more focused on the 70 something series than it is the A, and also the FE, the fan edition. I wonder what that says of,
totally
you
clear.
Know. Right. I wonder what y'all are thinking about those other regions that you sell this A series in, huh? But, you know. But Samsung didn't just bring devices that you can buy. They also brought devices you cannot buy. And this is one of those things we didn't get to see in person because we never went to Barcelona. But the Samsung display department / section of the company came through with a few concepts as well. You'll see at our, like, everything announced at MWC sort of roundup piece what I'm talking about. It's a bunch of folding display concept devices, including a briefcase display, which is so silly to me. It's like this metal briefcase you see in movies and TVs, like very silver and whatever. And then you can unfold it into like this, I don't know, like 27-inch TV type of thing. Then you'll also see they brought a Flex Gaming concept. That's kind of a Switch that can fold in half, right? Basically, it's a 7.2-inch OLED screen, folds horizontally in half. And then they have kind of like controllers along the sides of the screen. Very interesting. We saw that from Android Police. And then Allison Johnson at The Verge posted some videos on social media of this thing that basically looks like a Galaxy Z Flip. However, instead of folding in half, it has two hinges along the top and bottom. So it folds inwards two ways. So it's like a tri-fold, but like covers most of the screen. It's like when you're wrapping a gift
so
and you don't
dumb.
Want to fold it in half. What? You wrap and you just can't finish wrapping it, and you have to like stick one more band of
I take back
paper.
What I said earlier. I'm really happy about Apple's iterative updates because this crap makes no sense.
This is definitely like, what you need more in a device that can break with movable parts, like a device with hinges, is more hinges. That makes sense.
So that's why it's a concept, right? So yeah. So this is what we missed by not going to Barcelona and spending a ton of money to see these concept folding phones or gaming handhelds. And to be clear, like, Samsung did show some of the other concepts they brought to Barcelona at CES this year too. So we've seen some of these things. I do want to point out Mike Jones in our chat reminds us that the A55 actually was not sold in the US. So that's a good point. Like I said, I think
I saw it at some retailers, but okay. It was something.
It might be like
maybe some, it was a 54. I don't know.
Someone personally privately imported it.
There's no I hate the A series phones because yes, you can't really keep up with anything. It's a super
and then
pain.
To be clear, yeah, I mean, I think in the US you still have like other options like the Fan Edition S24 FE, the A70 something, whatever. And also the Pixel maybe just dominates in the US. Maybe that's why it's not. I mean, in that
I think
space,
just the basic S24, S series, like their flagships are the ones that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There
I will
are
say
other,
that this conversation has made it really feel like I went to Barcelona, though. So, aside from
that's not no, no.
Aside from the tapas,
aside from the tapas and the beer and the nice paella, like
and the microwaves.
No, we don't talk about the microwaves. I got to keep you away from microwaves. Apparently,
we would talk about that in another episode. But I mean, look, there's other stuff. I mean, Meta was there, Google was there, but we've seen their Android updates. We reported it. We didn't need to be there to cover like Android updates, that sort of stuff. So if you want all the full details, again, like I said, just check out our roundup on Engadget.com or check out our individual pieces there as well. And maybe today you just go get yourself some tapas to feel like you went to MWC, you know?
Get some tapas. Get some good food, folks.
Or paella. Mm. Or like...
Good paella.
Pinchos. I don't know, man. I don't know. I am hungry.
All right, let's move on to some other news. And hey, I've been heads down reviewing video cards for the past 2 weeks, actually for several weeks, because NVIDIA threw all their new cards at me. And then AMD announced the new RTX 50, was it? Not the RTX, the RX 9070 cards. And I have just been fully on those things. And I'll tell you, I was most excited about doing the 5070 because that thing was $550. I'm looking at the 9070 right now, but that thing was $550. It is supposed to have like the power of, NVIDIA supposedly said of the, you know, was it the 4090 or something like some
AMD said, right.
NVIDIA said like that one was supposed to have a power of like a much older card. And,
oh, NVIDIA said.
Yeah. That thing was supposed to be cool. And I found the, 5070 to be just kind of mid. Like, that's ultimately where it was. Like, I found it to be not as fast as some of the other ones. It wasn't much of an upgrade over the 4070. It was practically the same as the 4070 Ti, which is, I think that one came out last year or 2 years ago. There just wasn't much going on there. And, yeah, I feel like all of NVIDIA's marketing claims around the 5070 just really made it clear, like, they're leaning so much on AI and frame generation to get you higher frame rates. Not cool. Then an AMD comes out. And they announced the Radeon RX 9070 and the 9070 XT. And these things are $549 and $599. Mm. And the $599 card, the 9070 XT, is actually meant to compete with the $750 5070 Ti. So that was like gauntlet throwdown by AMD. We have this card that is much cheaper, almost as comparable. And in my review, like I think they're both really good cards. I really like the 9070 XT because it comes in $150 less than the 4070 Ti. It is, in many respects, many benchmarks, many games, like just as fast. And AMD is also doing a better job of getting into their AI upscaling stuff. So they've announced FSR4, Fidelity FX Super Resolution 4, which will do some of the stuff that DLSS has been doing with NVIDIA's cards. So AMD is catching up. These aren't perfect cards, but I think they're really, really compelling, especially for that price. The other thing, so you can't find the NVIDIA cards anywhere. All the 50 series cards have been jacked up in price. If you do find them at all, they're out of stock everywhere. And from what I'm seeing, people are finding the Radeon cards. They're in stock at a lot of stores. Easy to get, easy to buy at the base price. Some manufacturers are putting more tech in there to like make them price higher. But hey, this seems like a pretty clear win for AMD in the mid-range arena. So if you've been waiting for a new video card, now's the time to probably jump in or just wait a little bit and see how these prices go. We have not really talked about like the crazy tariff stuff that the Trump administration has been talking about. And they're trying to go gung ho with it. That will lead to a lot of things being more expensive. And that includes video cards, everything, food. So many things are going to be more expensive. So we're not even like talking to that level of it. But if you find, I think if you find a 9070 or 9070 XT, you're in the market for a mid-range card, you've got a card that's like 4 or 5 years old, these are going to be good upgrades for most people. So, hey, check
Grab
it out.
Grab it now.
Grab it now if you can. Yeah, before the prices get up. And good luck out there. Happy hunting, folks.
Devendra, what's your like workflow for reviewing a graphics card like?
Crying. I mean, it's mainly
crying. The fans are crying.
The fans are crying because, you know, I got to rip out the old card. I have to uninstall all the driver stuff of my current card. I have to rip out the old card, I have to plug in the new card, reinstall this set of drivers, and hope Windows plays nicely. And then weird shit just happens. Sometimes, like my video, my webcams just start getting wonky, and I don't, Windows, like, something got corrupted. I don't know, somewhere along the line. But that's basically it. I do that, and then I start benchmarking. I start playing games. I see how they feel. I run some stress tests because 3D Mark has some of those. And if the system crashes, that's like hardware issue, driver issue. Something's not up to snuff. I will say these Radeon cards are the best AMD cards I've had for a while when it comes to stability. I've had so much trouble with AMD drivers in the past, AMD hardware in general. When I did the R9 Fury X, which was like many, many years ago, that was like pre-COVID, that thing wouldn't even boot in my computer. Like my computer just was just incompatible with it for no reason, even though it was running high-end NVIDIA cards at the time. So AMD has come a long way, and they're definitely the underdog in this scenario because NVIDIA is now this big titan. Their power, like all the AI stuff, has made them one of the most valuable companies in the world. And I think AMD deserves, you know, some of that love, and they're treating the GPU market a little better, I think. So that's my main thing.
I do want to point out to people listening and watching that, like, poor Devendra, you had to, like, that workflow you just described, you had to switch over in, like, 2 days, like, this week, because the NVIDIA 5070 review was, like, what, Tuesday that it went up, and then Wednesday was the next one or something like that?
Wednesday was the two AMD cards, so I had to benchmark those two cards and have thoughts. At least we were able to combine them into one review, but, you know, that's a lot of stuff, and also I don't have a test system.
You were also dealing with Apple's MacBook news and, like, M4 and M3 Ultra, I guess. But, like,
thankfully, other people were able to write those, yeah. Other people were able to write those, and that helped out. But yeah, I had to talk to Apple. I had to do a lot of stuff. It's a busy time for all of us. Sam did all those MWC embargoes. It's crazy out there, folks. It's crazy. Anyway, that is the AMD NVIDIA war. Go check out our reviews, and you know.
Oh, and check out Igor wrote about why the GPU market is kind of such a mess right now in terms of, like, there's like systemic problems that have led to this point where it's impossible to find these things. They cost too much. Yeah, it's a great, great piece. I think it's really, like, hit a chord with people who've read it. The timing of it couldn't be better, right? Coming alongside these new reviews you put together.
The title is "The GPU Market is Built on a Broken Foundation" by Igor Bonifacic. And I think, like, yeah, good points. Like, if I had time to sit and breathe and get these out there outside of all the reviews, like, this Igor is pretty much saying everything I'm thinking. So
I love that. I mean, you agree. Yeah,
I agree. Our recommendation for video cards for the longest time has been do not buy because the prices got crazy. Stock is wild. Don't pay scalper prices. You don't, unless you are like some sort of like massive influencer or a streamer or something, you don't need a 5090. I see people out there convincing themselves they need $2,000 GPUs. And I'm like, you could get a whole ass, like, really good gaming computer for $1,500 for less than I'm seeing on sale. Like, I'm such a deal hound. Like, I cannot stomach that whole thing. So the 5090s, it is an Flex by NVIDIA, but it's not for anybody. It's these mid-range cards. It's going to be the cheaper cards coming in that are going to be really good. We reviewed the Intel Arc B, what was it, the 580, 570. And those are budget cards that are actually pretty decent, too. So to me, that's where the market is and where it's more interesting.
You're a capital D dad, though, so of course you're searching for budgets.
I mean, that's just how I roll. Like, I'm from an immigrant family coming to the U.S. Like, everything was so, like, that is how I had one video game per year growing up. Like, it was so hard to, like, be surrounded by all this stuff, all this pop culture and abundance and whatever. Anyway, that's my mentality, but also I'm pro-consumer, right? I'm consumer first, and I'm not going to make excuses for NVIDIA and how they're pricing these cards or how things are getting expensive. Enough of that, folks. Let's have a little fun. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Nate, go ahead. What do you got?
All right. I have two things. One is The Pit on Max.
So good. So good.
Is basically, a sequel to ER, but it's not. And like,
the Michael Crichton estate wouldn't call it a sequel to ER.
But like, I think that was that sounds like for sure it's been reported that that was like the plan was to literally do it as if Noah Wyle is John Carter again, which I would have been absolutely all for. But what they came up with is still also really good. And I like that they're doing the 24 trick of doing it an hour at a time. Mm-hmm. Like every episode I watch when it's over, I'm like, wait, it's over?
It's an hour of real time. So you're there for a day.
Every time.
You're there for an 8-hour shift, I believe. Like that's the thing.
15.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's a 15 episode season.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
But like the actors are great. The stories are compelling. It definitely feels like a little bit of a throwback, but also with enough like modern, you know, storytelling sensibility. It doesn't feel too like overly dramatic or soapy, right? It's just like a good, solid, normal TV drama.
The mid-season episode, I think it was like number 7 or 8, was like, it was one of those where a lot of things come to pass all at the same time. It was like devastating. Like that is just a devastating hour of television for good reasons, and like sad things happen, and like it's just like all over the place. But that was incredible.
It sets up what the back half of the season will have to do with, but it's just enjoyable. And then the other thing I'm keeping an eye on, obviously, is Last of Us Season 2 comes out on April 13th. There's a South by Southwest panel this weekend with the showrunners and a bunch of the actors that I'm looking forward to. And Variety also had a great interview with some photos from the sets. And one of them is great. It was a shot of like Joel, his workshop and his house in Jackson from the time when he was like happy for a few years and relatively peaceful. And it was a picture of Pedro Pascal with Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann. I was just thinking how cool it must be to be Neil Druckmann. Like, I made this game, or, you know, his huge team made this game, and you see it on your screen and then you get to walk into it. Like, it's wild. Like the amount of detail they put into these sets and making it feel authentic is great. I'm excited about seeing the new cast members. It's going to be so devastating for people who played the second game.
Yeah. You know. I don't know how reactions online are going to be something.
It's going to be
crazy. Sherlyn, did you ever end up watching that first season?
I finished Last of Us. I loved it. Yeah.
Okay. But you don't know what happened in the Last of Us 2. Avoid spoilers.
I cannot remember it.
Okay. Avoid spoilers because they are.
I will.
The entire plot that has been out there. So it's going to be interesting to see if they do like original episodes or like dive into certain. They are characters from that game that I'm more
in Variety. They mentioned that they're working on an episode that's similar to the Bill and Frank episode from season 1, where it takes a character who you don't meet and is just mentioned off screen, and you get like, I'm already starting to see how I can fill in. I won't say who it is for spoilers that people who want to go in fresh, but
the characters in the like, it's after he goes through the skyscraper thing, but the characters who are like the bow and arrow folks, like it's
the Seraphites,
like
they'll be in this.
They may have some good backstory. Like I would love to spend
I feel like that might come next season, just based on like how they're gonna. I guess I have no idea how they're gonna plot this thing out.
It's gonna be 2 seasons, right, for Last of Us 2?
Yep, for sure.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So we're entering the hype cycle for this. I'm really interested in seeing what the panel's like on Sunday afternoon.
Awesome. Well, Nate, I know you have a hard out, so let's wrap you, and then we will continue with the rest of this. All right. So where can people find you online, Nate?
Yeah, I am occasionally online on Threads and Blue Sky at Nate Ingram. And then obviously you can find all my stuff on Engadget.
Check out Nate's iPad reviews. Like, I'm sure things will be coming up. And feel free to shout at him about how you feel about iPads on socials.
Yes, yell at me about iPads. I love it.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Nate.
Thanks, everyone.
What do you got, Sherlyn?
Okay, I've been excited all week to share my pick this week. Kind of wish Nate was here for it, but I'll just tell him directly afterwards. So I was watching this show on Netflix, and it's got me gripped. I've been like rewatching it again because I'm like, whoa, I really love the world they built, kind of. It's Bodies on Netflix. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it. Yeah,
Devendra.
It's based on
you've seen it. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. It's based on this graphic novel, loosely, of the same name, by Cy Spencer, I believe. I don't know if it's, I look at that name and I go C because it's S-I. I'm like C, but it's, I think Cy, like short for Simon, maybe. And it's about time travel. It's about
Sherlyn, you're talking about the show. I watched this entire show and my memory of it is just like, because it's such a Netflix show, but go ahead. I loved it.
Okay. So what happens is basically, I think we start in more modern times, 2023. And a naked corpse appears in an alleyway just out of nowhere. It just appears. And what happens is we find out the same corpse appears across four total different time zone, the time like eras. So in 1890, in 1941, and then in 2053 as well. So there's all of the like usual time travel tropes of like, you know, loops and like conflicts and whatever. But like this, I don't know. I just really enjoyed this story. I don't know why. I think it deals with a lot of very interesting themes as well. There's like some hint at like racial sort of conflict in the 2023 timeline. Then there's some hint at like homosexuality being a scene in the 1890 timeline. And then there's like World War II in the 1941 timeline. 2053 is just like, I think, the culmination of a whole bunch of different things.
I remember the one thing I remember about this show is that, oh man, you had no money for 2053. You have really crummy, like you have like sort of future looking cars, but you're just, it's just like neighborhoods in London, man. Like,
you think they ran out of budget for the CGI to make it
look like the future. It's kind of hilarious. Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, so I've been watching some other stuff. I'm trying to like not give all of my recommendations away at once just in case I run out of things to recommend eventually. But this one was really, really gripping. It's a limited series. There's only like one season so far. And I really enjoy it. Of course, I've been catching up on White Lotus and Severance as well. I almost said White Severance.
I would actually love to know, do you have initial thoughts on White Lotus this season? Because I'm like, I'm tired. I'm a little tired of the drama of what White Lotus does, but it's set in, you know, Southeast Asia now. Yeah, so like a little closer.
It's set in Thailand. Yeah. And obviously like it resonates a bit more with me than the previous seasons have just because of the setting. But then in another way, there's like different sets of people always in every season of White Lotus. This season, we've got a trio of girlfriends in their like, I want to say 40s, I'm not sure, but like they're later in life than like an average 20 something year old. Right. This one has Michelle Monaghan. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Monaghan, Leslie Bibb, I believe, is also one of the people in this little scenario. And they're just three friends who like backstab each other whenever they can, but then they also are very nice to each other in front of each other. So it's like a really interesting study of that dynamic. I really, really like it because it's actually super realistic. Hats off to Mike White for understanding this dynamic so well.
Carrie Coon is family. One of the other friends, and she is one of the greatest living actresses right now. So I hope the show incredible. Gives her more.
I hope it does for her what like this show has done for Jennifer Coolidge.
I mean, she has been a big actress for a while. She's been doing a lot of stuff.
I feel bad.
This show's actually a step down for Carrie Coon, to be honest. But anyway.
Another group that this season of White Lotus looks at is this family with Parker Posey as the mom. Three kids. Patrick Schwarzenegger is one of them. I can't remember all the actor names right now, but I know the dad's played by the same actor that played Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
And I think what people are talking about in the subreddits is how realistic or not this portrayal of a family from North Carolina is.
It is a rich white family from North Carolina. Yeah. Let me tell you, down here in Georgia, I'm surrounded by a lot of those folks. That does feel real.
It feels very accurate, especially from my only person I know that's from North Carolina, which is our Billy Steele. And I've been asking him to watch it. He hasn't seen it yet, but he reminded me that he really wanted to watch it because one of his favorite actors is in it. Walton Goggins is also in this and just does his usual thing of playing these characters extremely well because I viscerally react whenever he's on screen.
As an actor, he's great because he can be silly. If you watch The Righteous Gemstones, like he can be silly as hell, like in a comedy. And he can also be like what we know him mainly for is being kind of like
kind of a scoundrel,
kind of a badass guy at times too, especially from The Shield. But yeah, so you're liking it, Sherlyn?
I am enjoying it. Lucky Dog Podcast adds that as someone from NC, it's too relatable. So yeah, so basically I like it. It feels very real. It feels very relatable because these vignettes of people we're seeing seem really realistic. So that's what I'm really enjoying so far. There's some mystery, some connection to the previous seasons.
So I like Mike White a lot. I've loved his movies. He's done TV shows before too, like as a creator. I think he's a really empathetic guy and he's really smart about relationships.
Loved him from School of Rock.
White Lotus season 1 and 2, really good stuff. This one, I'm just getting really tired of like the shtick, because a lot of the shtick is basically white people problems, man.
Yep.
Like that's kind of what I'm like, man, we could do more. We could do more. I understand he's writing what he knows and everything. So I would love for this show to get a better, like a bigger writing crew and more people involved to like
a bit more diversity in it.
Well, just have like different perspectives. That's all. Like
diversity of perspective.
The whole thing about White Lotus is, what is it like for white people to come in basically into these exotic environments? And the second one was in Italy, right? Or Sicily, I think. So like it was like a very specific thing too, where it's still people coming in being outsiders in this environment. I just feel like they're saying the same things over again. But I like these actors. I hope Walton Goggins gets his chance to shine. And I love that he kind of messes around with the HBO/Max formula of like, well, we got to start this show with a murder or something to like really keep people hooked. And HBO was doing that for a while, for years. So that's cool. Glad you're digging it, Sherlyn.
What's yours? What's your tip for or recommendation for everyone?
My tip, and actually I think it stars somebody who was in Bodies. It stars Stephen Graham, who played Mannix in Bodies.
Yes.
Now take that guy, Sherlyn.
Older Mannix?
The older Mannix, I think. But take that guy and imagine if he was buff as hell. Like had rippling biceps. Like
no way.
Yes.
No
so
way.
Go look at the trailer for 1,000 Blows, which is the new
no
show
way.
On Hulu right now.
That guy's so out of shape in Bodies.
Well, he's big, right? He's just a big dude. But in
I
this
didn't
show,
mean to body shame anybody.
In this one, he's like, well, also, you know, he's one of those guys who's like, he's post 50 now. Like your chance to do like big actiony roles. Now is your chance. Like your body can take some of it now. Once you hit 60, it gets much tougher. This is a new show from the guy who did Peaky Blinders. It is a period piece. It's a really cool period too, because it's set in, I don't know if it's like technically Victorian London, but it's essentially about several different characters. One character is a Jamaican immigrant who's new to the country and like thinks he's going to go work at the zoo and be a lion tamer. Doesn't really work out that way. Other characters who are in the underground, including a woman played by, I think, Erin Doherty, who was in The Crown, and she is like the head of this group of lady thieves. That's super cool. And Stephen Graham plays this guy who's basically the head of a boxing ring, the head of this like, I don't know, like criminal underworld thing too. And it's cool. It's fun. Like it's all those characters coming in. It is the character, you know, the perspective of an immigrant trying to survive in London in like a not very welcoming time for them, but also women fighting for their own to like make money and have their own place in a society that doesn't want them there. And Stephen Graham, like it's really just about Stephen Graham being buff as hell in a boxing ring. And you don't believe me, Sherlyn, go look at the trailer for this thing. I linked it in our show notes.
I will.
Wild to see. I think he's also been one of my like favorite actors for a while. Like he's been a character actor.
He's really good in Bodies.
He was good in Bodies. He's been in a lot of Guy Ritchie stuff. Like I think it originally Snatch and his Lockstock too, maybe. I've always loved him. This show's a lot of
fun.
People
in chat love him too. Yeah.
If you like Peaky Blinders, and you will not believe the idea of Stephen Graham as super buff as a boxer man, if you do not think that sounds real, go look. Go watch 1,000 Blows. It's on Hulu right now.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky and Mastodon. I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to tell me how you would use an iPad mini that folds, you can tell me on, I guess, Threads at Sherlynstagram, CHERLYNNSTAGRAM, or Blue Sky, Sherlyn at .bsky.social. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening or consuming this podcast, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.